All right, and another session here from the Science 2.0 Barcamp. I'm here with Johannes Breuer, and he just was moderating a session, and maybe he can first introduce him quickly what you are doing, and then you can maybe dive into the topic of the session.
Mm-hmm. My name is Johannes Breuer. I'm a postdoctoral researcher at the University of Cologne in the Media Psychology Group, and also at the Knowledge Media Research Institute in Tübingen, and I study media effects. My PhD was on the uses and effects of video games mostly, but I'm also interested in the methods of media effects research or social sciences in general, and in open science, or what is also called science 2.0, so how is science progressing in its methods and dissemination.
Okay. And you had now a session kind of, yeah, practical open science, how we can really do this, and especially the trouble that we might have with this. Maybe you can give a rough overview, or maybe your conclusions out of this, what mm-hmm. we say.
I think as many things, it strongly depends on the discipline you're in. So everybody has her or his own challenges or barriers when they want to do open science or science 2.0. And as I briefly presented in this panel for us in psychology, it's, for instance, one thing is the translation of questionnaires and answering scales and items. If we want to share our data set, which if we collect the data is typically in German, so translations are one thing. And I think another topic that we talked about for a while are data formats. It starts with seemingly trivial things, as I gave the example of a comma or a full stop separation for decimals in the US versus in Germany or other European countries. And this affects, again, the choice of formats, because this might get you trouble with comma-separated formats and so on and so forth. And those are very practical things that happen in collaboration with other scientists already, and especially if you want to share your data with somebody you do not meet face-to-face, or you don't talk to on over the phone or over Skype to explain what you did. I think those are the practical challenges. And it kind of starts from documenting what you do for yourself, for others in your team, and it gets more challenging. So documenting for yourself, documenting for others in your team, documenting for others in your projects, or documenting for somebody who's completely unfamiliar with your work or your project. And those are the challenges in how you, for instance, comment your code, how you format your data, how you name your variables, and all those things that used in, I don't know if there is science 1.0, but used to not be that much of a problem, because it only had to be you, maybe your colleagues from your team, who need to be able to understand what you did and need to be able to reproduce what you did. But in open science, of course, ideally people understand what you did and can reproduce what you do without talking to you, just by looking at the documents you provide. And I think those this poses a lot of several practical challenges, and people, I think, in different disciplines, as they have different data, for instance, have found different solutions to. And I gave examples from psychology, which are very different from what I heard about bioinformatics, for instance, here, or the life sciences. And it was interesting to hear how some people tackle these issues. And then we came to the other very large topic that was, I think, the focus of a session before this, which was training of students, training of researchers. What do they need to learn? What are crucial skills for science 2.0 or open science culture?
Exactly. And that basically we also talked that this is kind of crucial to implement this rather early. You have experienced yourself as working with students, and you see the trouble that they having doing this. Can you talk a bit about your teaching or your issues you see when you're teaching this stuff as well?
Mm-hmm. Very often, I think, and we had this discussion also in this panel, is that people, there's this barrier, or there's some people, or many students are often scared of the entry into some technical things, for instance, statistical software packages. And I think it's very important to make sure that they lose this fear early on, because I learned most of these skills, I learned them very, very late, during my PhD, actually. And I think I would have been faster with my PhD, for one thing, had I learned them while I was still doing my, well, diploma it was back then, now it would probably be bachelor's or master's degree. So I think it's important to get students in contact as early as possible and show them that there's no need to be afraid of syntax or coding, and this is no, in many cases, it's not rocket science for many things that they need to do while they're studying. And then also one comment that I found really helpful in this panel was that it usually teaching works better if you have some application area, because if you have abstract learning, you just learn a software or a programming language, for instance, and you don't have something that you apply to, you forget. It's like even with human languages, because I just talked to another participant about language learning, and I said I had Italian and French in school, but I never used it, so I kind of lost it. But if you, like my wife, who's fluent in French, she lived in France, so there was a need, and she studied there, so there's a need to be able to speak French. And if you have, coming back to the original topic of research, if you have a problem that you need to solve, and you know, oh, I can only solve this if I use R, or a specific package for R, then this makes perfect sense to learn R. And this is also the way that it happened for me. I was like, I can still do that in SPSS, and it's okay, I'll learn SPSS, and I'm fine with SPSS. But at some point when I was analyzing panel data, I noticed that SPSS has limitations for that, so I had to learn something else. And I think that this is important to always look at the application area and teach the students why they should learn it and why they should use it. It's the same with math. When I had math classes in school, I was like, why would I ever need this? But then I had statistics class in psychology, and I was like, now stochastics or probability, it makes sense, because now I have an applied problem. I want to know how likely is it that this or that happens in my study. And now I kind of understand why it is useful to learn or useful to know. And I think that's an important thing in teaching in general. You need to think about the application or the problems that the students want to solve or need to solve, and then the entry is easier, I think.
Intrinsic motivation.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so, and also you showed clearly that, well, nobody will do this perfectly, right? I mean, you stumble into problems with doing this, and it's maybe one should live with this and try to do this as best as one can do this, and should not be hampered by this fear of, oh, I don't do this now completely in the open way of doing this, but just do things and get stuff out. There are several tools, as I said, for different domains, and basically I think one conclusion was also talk to other people and get information from your peers there, right?
Yeah, and I think it's a step-by-step process. You can't just push the button and then you're open or you're science 2.0. It's you need to learn several things. You need to be able to use some tools, and the workflow changes, the process of research changes, but it's a step-by-step process, I think. And it's easier if you start early, and it's easier if you really go step-by-step and don't say, okay, you did this until now, everything you ever learned is wrong, now you need to do something completely different. But to go step-by-step and teach people the tools, teach people the process, and also show them, and I think that's interesting, I mean, there's this whole CV of failures thing going on Twitter and I think Facebook now, to also show students, and you mentioned this, when you, it's like live coding kind of thing, you write your syntax and then you run it, and then they see, oh, there's an error, and I'm the tutor, I'm the teacher, and there's an error in my syntax, and the world's not going to end, this happens.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just going to check my syntax or my code and see where I made the mistake. Maybe even I have to Google it, because, of course, also teachers Google stuff, and they look on Stack Overflow or Stacks Exchange and search how to do or solve certain problems. And I think that's also a very important experience to see that even the instructors, the teachers, they have errors in their syntax or code, they make mistakes, and they learn how to fix them.
Learning to fail, learning that there's friction in the system and that you can overcome that.
Right? Yeah, I think it's the coding saying with fail often and fail early.
Exactly.
And I think that's also true for science.
Yeah. Yeah, failing makes us experts. Johannes, do we have anything forgotten, anything to add now?
No, I don't think so. We think teaching the practices and the tools for open science at an early stage makes sense, because that's easier. So thinking about teaching and training of researchers is very important at all stages of your career.
Okay, thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed this as much as I did, and I hope to meet you soon again.
Thank you.
Enjoy. Bye.